The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. Mariska's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. And Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe in Burbank and Darien. Visit chuckscafe.com. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast with NBCChicago.com's James Naveau.
It's not even so much me as it's Ronick. He's good.
And 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski.
You don't play this game with a big heart and a big bag of knuckles in front of the net. You don't got dinky-doo.
Welcome into the latest installment of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Naveau from NBC5 Chicago. With me, as always, the one, the only, the ever-present hockey genius on your radio and in your earpieces for this podcast's purpose, Jay Zawoski. Jay, that might be the weirdest intro I've ever done for you, but you know what, man? It's the off-season for us. Let's just get creative and make some stuff up.
You continue to oversell me every episode, and then as the episode goes on, you're like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't know anything.
This guy's a dope.
This guy sucks. Why am I listening to this? This is a waste of my time. Click. No, it's good to be back. We got, again, I was thinking early this week, like, man, I maybe overshot my wad thinking we do it every week. And, of course, the Hawks give us some news to talk about. So before we get to our conference final previews, let's talk about the Blackhawks news of the week. And that is the new contract for Richard Panik. 2 years, $2.8 million cap hit per. I initially tweeted that I think it's a fair deal. I just don't know if it's great for the Hawks because they've got a lot of holes to fill and not any money to do it. And with him in the fold, without some other sort of major transaction happening, I don't know how they're going to ice a team that can, maybe a competitor, maybe a team that can, you know, make the playoffs, but a Stanley Cup champion? I'm not sure.
No, you're just kind of waiting for another shoe to drop, and I think the widely assumed thing is that that shoe has to be a major trade, and I think at this point, you kind of have to guess that it's not going to be a contract like Corey Crawford. You would think that the Hawks wouldn't end up dumping him after they already traded away Scott Darling. You would have felt that if they were going to get rid of Crawford to free up some salary cap space, they would have kept Darling in the fold. But I just, the way I have to look at this is they can't be looking at, you know, Vegas rescuing them from, you know, potential salary cap hell this summer. I got to think that either they know the cap's going to go up more than we think it's going to go up, or they're thinking that they're going to make some kind of big trade. And I think the one guy that always comes to my mind when I think potential big trade for this Blackhawks team has to be Brent Seabrook. And that, you know, that thought has not diminished at all since the offseason began, and it certainly hasn't diminished after they signed Richard Panik to a deal for $2.8 million a season.
Well, here's the question then. If it is going to be Brent Seabrook, you're looking at a team just sort of saving you from that contract, right? You're looking at maybe some prospects, but more likely some picks. Something that's not going to cost the Blackhawks anything, so they can go ahead and sign a couple free agents with that Seabrook money. That is certainly a possibility. The way Stan Bowman was talking to me indicates there's going to be more changes than just that. And when you look at the things that caused the Blackhawks to lose the series against Nashville and the things that Stan Bowman was pissed off about, I don't think Brent Seabrook qualifies as one of those reasons, in Bowman's mind at least. Yes, we see him regressing. There's no doubt about it. Yes, the contract is too long and maybe a little bit too rich, but definitely too long. But Brent Seabrook is a guy that not only on the ice gives you what he's got as much as he can, off the ice he is their main vocal leader. And I know since metrics have become a popular thing in hockey that stuff has sort of gone out the window, but I'm telling you it matters. It definitely matters. You look at the impact a guy like David Ross had on the Cubs last year, and you go on and on and on with guys who were not great players but had a great influence on the locker room, and Brent Seabrook is one of those guys for sure. So with that in mind, I'd be a little bit stunned if it was Brent Seabrook. It makes sense money-wise, of course, but I just don't see the Hawks, after what they went through against Nashville, saying to one of the guys that actually does try and actually does care, you're the guy who's the odd man out here. I just can't see that happening.
Well, okay then, but in that case, who the heck is it going to be then? If it's not going to be Brent Seabrook, it has to be somebody who makes comparable money. And they can afford, not necessarily afford to lose, but they can lose and it not completely devastate them. I feel like if they get rid of a guy like Nick Jalmerson, it completely devastates them. And I really think they go from being a potential championship contender if they make the right moves to fringe playoff team if they lose Nick Jalmerson, because then your defense isn't even close to being good enough. And you don't have the cap space to get it back up to that level. So if it's not going to be Brent Seabrook, who do you think it's going to be?
Well, I think I don't know who I think it's going to be. I think that it could be, or maybe should be, Artemi Panarin. Now, I've been maybe bagging on this guy all year. I took some criticism for it early on in the podcast this season when I first sort of mentioned that I think he's kind of a one-dimensional scorer and can't do much else. Well, that, again, 2 years in a row, showed itself in the playoffs. He was an absolute non-factor. You just paid him a new deal that kicks in $6 million for next year. Look, he makes Patrick Kane a better player. There's no doubt about it. But when you look at the forwards on the horizon, you've got Nick Schmaltz, you've got Alex DeBrincat, you've got Alexander Fortin, you've got all these guys who are ready to step up to the NHL, maybe not right away, but soon. I think you can spare a forward if the return is someone that can help you now on the blue line, right? And there's one name that, and again, this is extremely unlikely, but I'm just going to propose it here and sort of hopes that it happens. Colton Parayko from the St. Louis Blues is a restricted free agent. Chances are that St. Louis is going to sign him, lock him up long term, and that's going to be the end of things. But if there's one team that I think you could dangle Panarin to because of his relationship with Vladimir Tarasenko, it might be the St. Louis Blues. And Colton Parayko is a sort of physical, puck-moving defenseman that the Blackhawks have always relied on when they won their Stanley Cups and what they desperately need at this point. As a restricted free agent, you could probably get him for $2.5-3.5 million a year, saving yourself some money on the cap that way, and you make your defense that much better. Now, I looked at the roster after the panic thing happened yesterday. I spent some time on Cap Friendly, and I want to share this with you. It's not pretty, all right? So the estimation is that the NHL will have a $75 million cap, right? Going up about $2 million. So here's the forwards that I have worked in, and the Hawks with this are still $1.3 million over the cap. Okay? So I've got Panic, Taves, and Kane, and Hossa, Panarin, Anisimov, Kane, Schmaltz, DeBrincat, Hartman, Hayden, Caro, and Alex Fortin and David Kampf, however you say his name, as the two spare forwards. Now, this is assuming that Kruger and Van Riemsdyk are gone, which I think a lot of us can assume with the Vegas thing. And your D is Keith Seabrook, Forsling, Jalmerson, Kempney, and Roosevelt. And then I signed Brian Campbell for $1 million. Okay? Just to play around, the Hawks are still $1.3 million over the cap with that roster. Now, currently, they still have Marcus Kruger, who makes $3 million plus, and they still have Trevor Van Riemsdyk. So, I don't know. I really don't know how, without a major move, it's going to work at all next year. And if they're going to trade a major player, they've got to get people that can help now, because you've still got Hossa, you've still got an aging Keith, an aging Seabrook, and the window is still open a little bit. So they've got to get someone that's going to help them right away. And I think trading Brent Seabrook is not going to get you that sort of asset.
I think it at least gives you the flexibility to go out and get that kind of asset in terms of your salary cap situation, though. It takes you out of a situation where you can't make a deal that's money for money. Like, you can't, like, acquire a guy back who has a contract. I think that trading away Brent Seabrook at least gives you a little bit of flexibility to where you're not stuck making moves where your only assets you can bring back in are prospects. I feel like it kind of opens maybe a few more doors up for Stan Bowman if you have a guy like that off the books. And obviously, that's a big ask. I mean, you look at the situation with Patrick Sharp or the situation with Brian Bickell, and those guys had contracts that ended a lot sooner than Brent Seabrook's does, and they still had to put sweeteners into the deal to get rid of those guys. So,
yeah, the sweetener was Teuvo Teravainen. Let's not pretend like it was an extra draft pick.
The sweetener was Teuvo Teravainen. The sweetener was Steven Johns. These guys, they had to give up pretty solid prospects to dump some of these guys. So you kind of look at Brent Seabrook, and yeah, I think it's a good thing that can get them some flexibility. The problem you run into, though, is what kind of prospect are you going to have to give up in order to sweeten that deal enough to get somebody to take it.
Well, the only hope is that a team like Vegas can look at it and say, look, we're a new team. We need to have some sort of, you know, veteran leader on this squad, someone that's been there before. Man, I'm hesitant to move him. And I know the contract's not ideal, and I know that he's regressing, but without him on the team, your D sucks, man. That's really bad. Like, I really don't know what are they going to do? So let's take a look at it. Without Seabrook, we'll just assume somehow the Van Riemsdyk is still here, right? So you got Keith, Jalmerson, Forsling, Van Riemsdyk, Kempney, and Roosevelt. Like, that's... You can't... I mean, without Brent Seabrook, what does this team look like? And which team is going to give you a younger, more effective NHL defenseman in exchange for an aging Brent Seabrook? I just don't see it happening. So if you're going to make a trade, it's got to be something that can fetch you tangible, helpful, younger players right now. And the only name, realistically, looking at this roster, the only name that's going to do that is Artemi Panarin. Maybe Artem Anisimov?
Well, I was going to bring up Artem Anisimov. Yeah, I feel like he could be the kind of guy that could work with, too.
Yeah, and he has everybody's got a no-movement clause, so that's just, you might as well just say it, but those things are always negotiable, right? I don't think that Artem Anisimov is going to be like, nope, I'm staying here even though you don't want me. Which player really does that? But again, trading him, what do you think? Would that be more of a cap relief sort of a thing? Trade him for picks and use that money elsewhere? Or is it someone that can bring you something in return? I don't know. I really don't know if I was another GM what I'd be willing to give up for Anisimov.
Well, I mean, do you really think that St. Louis would be willing to... A, do you think St. Louis would be willing to trade Colton Parayko in division? And B, do you think the Blackhawks would be willing to trade Artemi Panarin to the St. Louis Blues and hand them another top six scoring weapon who you could pair him up with Vladimir Tarasenko? And those guys could realistically run roughshod over the NHL like Kane and Panarin have the last two seasons.
Well, here's the deal. If you're trading Panarin as the Blackhawks, you are admitting that you don't think that he is someone that can help you in the playoffs, right? So if you're trading him, you're doing it presumably to get better. So if the Blackhawks think they can improve the team by trading Artemi Panarin, I don't think that being in the division should matter. If they think they're getting the better player and it's going to make them the better team, or is a better fit for what they need, screw it. If that's where you're going to get the best deal from, so be it, if it's in division. Look, it's been two short playoff things. He's played 11 playoff games in his Blackhawks career. I understand that. But the dude was an absolute non-factor. And if you're going to pay someone $6 million to play on your left wing for the foreseeable future, I've got to get more production than that. And if you're looking for a piece to move that's going to get you something of value in return, that is the one piece. And I'm not saying absolutely do it or find a way to trade him, absolutely. But if you're looking to upgrade with a trade, that is the one guy that can really make you better right away. And I think that the temptation for the Blues to add another forward that can help, they've got a pretty solid D. Their blue line is pretty good. They lack, aside from Tarasenko, a lot of star power up front. And maybe they feel like Artemi Panarin is that missing piece they need. I think someone like Colton Parayko, maybe exactly Colton Parayko, is exactly what the Hawks need. So it's a trade of convenience, and maybe it makes both teams better. Who knows? But I know as currently assembled, I don't think this Blackhawks team is ready for a Stanley Cup again.
I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you, and I feel like when the moves are made this offseason, I feel like unless you're really, really careful, you might end up moving away from that direction. I think the question I have about the Artemi Panarin trade possibility is the same one that I have about the people who have said that maybe this contract for Richard Panik, it doesn't necessarily preclude a team like Las Vegas from taking him. My question then is, why on earth did you sign Artemi Panarin to an extension when you did? Why wouldn't it make him more potentially valuable if you traded him without a contract so that the team could negotiate it themselves? I don't really get where the rush was with that, do you?
Well, I think the rush came when they saw him put together another regular season that was just fantastic. And that maybe they prematurely signed him. Maybe they assumed that there would be some growth in the playoffs. And look, maybe there will be. Maybe next year the Hawks make the playoffs and Artemi Panarin's a machine. And I've had some Twitter discussions with people about maybe Nashville just being the absolute worst matchup imaginable for the Hawks. And maybe if it had been St. Louis or someone else, they would have had a better time and won the series. But from what we saw, look, they've got to be able to, even if that's true, even if Nashville is the worst possible matchup, they've got to be able to adapt to playing styles. And when they won Stanley Cups, they were able to do that. Yeah, the Anaheim Ducks beat the crap out of them in 2015 physically, but they found a way to power through it and win the series anyway, right? They had a ton of depth up the middle. They had young players contributing. They had all the things you needed to win a Stanley Cup that year. This year, there was no semblance of that anywhere. From the moment the puck dropped in Game 1 till the end of Game 4, it felt like it was all Nashville, man. And I know, sure, maybe they're not the ideal draw, but I struggle to believe that they would have done much better against other teams playing the way they did.
I mean, it's not like Nashville went out in the second round and laid an egg, proving that they were some fluke team that, you know, shouldn't have dominated the Blackhawks. I think they look really good against the St. Louis Blues, and I think they're a very it's very reasonable that they've made it to this point. It's very understandable that they've made it to the conference final against Anaheim. I feel like Nashville, as you said, you picked them before the season started. You picked Nashville to win the Stanley Cup.
I did. Thanks for remembering.
It, to me, like, yeah, like, Artemi Panarin didn't look great in this postseason. Wasn't fantastic last year either. He wasn't god-awful. He just was what you pretty much expect a rookie to be in the playoffs, honestly. But this season, he just was, like you said, was a non-factor. But you can say that about virtually any Blackhawk on the ice. It felt like they were all non-factors. It felt like just the shell of a team in that series. And I think that's what's obviously precipitated a lot of the hand-wringing and a lot of the anger following that postseason loss. I'm still not willing to say that Artemi Panarin can't, and obviously you're not saying this, so I'm not inferring that you're saying this. I still think he can blossom into something that he can play in the playoffs. I just think a four-game sample size, I'm not going to, you know, wave the white flag on that possibility. And to kind of bolster your argument, I think a lot of teams are probably going to feel the same way if the Blackhawks decide, hey, maybe we're going to trade this guy.
All right, well, now that Richard Panik is locked up for 2 years, you know you can head to Triple Threat Sports for your brand new sparkling Richard Panik jersey. They are the best place to go in the area to get your NHL jerseys lettered. But did you know they're also the best place to go if your team needs outfitting, whether you're an elite travel high school or college program that needs to outfit hundreds of kids, or if you're a beer and pizza league with 12 players, Triple Threat Sports can put you in pro-quality jerseys at pricing you can afford. Triple Threat Sports can work with you on every aspect of the job as well. Logo design, fitting, apparel for off-ice, you name it. And you don't have to be a hockey player to wear uniforms from Triple Threat. They can get uniforms and apparel for all sports, baseball, softball, football, lacrosse, and more. So for more info, call Chris at 708-478-6090 or email him for more info at chris@triplethreatsports.com. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. And, of course, we want to thank Triple Threat Sports for their help with our Patreon site. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, every penny we get goes to improving the podcast. We've already bought a laptop, mixing board, several microphones, some headphones, everything we need. Next step is for us to get a speaker so we can do on-location live podcasts. That's the next expense we have. So if you'd like to help us with that, patreon.com/madhousepod. And you don't get nothing for helping us. There's a lot of gift options there. From t-shirts to koozies to signed little photographs to whatever you want to donate, we've got something for you to say thank you. And Triple Threat Sports are the ones that help us with that. So we thank them and thank you for your already incredible support and for your support in the future.
Obviously, yeah, we're incredibly grateful and incredibly blown away that, you know, you guys have continued to support us both with your listenership, your subscriptions, and your financial, you know, help for us. I mean, all the stuff that we've gotten is just beautiful, and it's made this podcast, I think, bigger and better than you and I had probably ever imagined it would be. So again, and I'll reflect what Jay said and just thank you guys so much for all the help and support that you've given us for the almost 2 years that we've been doing this thing.
I think it's over 2 years, buddy.
No, it's, I thought we like started right before the 2015-16 season. Yeah. So I think it's like September is going to be our anniversary.
Oh, that's cute. One more little Hawks thing I want to talk about. We've been through this a million times, but I was fascinated when I saw the story what a retweet without comment would accomplish. And it was the photo of Patrick Kane who had given up his seat on an airplane for a soldier. Obviously, a commendable move. But I just retweeted the story without comment, and as expected, World War III broke out on my Twitter timeline between people arguing, you know, if he's a piece of crap, if it was all fake, whatever. But people still, Patrick Kane is still a very polarizing character. Not that it should be a surprise that he is, based on everything, but, man, I was just kind of curious to see what would happen when that story went out. And, you know, people rushing to show it as, you know, look how great he is. People saying, imagine, you know, being a piece of crap your whole life and then doing one nice thing and being forgiven. It just, I thought it was interesting, kind of an interesting social experiment. Obviously, the situation is a lot more complicated than we can discuss on a podcast. We've tried it before. There's a lot of gray area on every aspect of it. But I just thought it was interesting to see, like, were people who were mad at him before sort of going to back off and use this to say, oh, nah, maybe I'll change my mind a little bit. I didn't see that.
No, neither did I. And it's not shocking either. I mean, I think the appropriate reaction to it, honestly, was, you know, I know that everyone always feels like their reaction is probably the most appropriate or whatever, but my reaction to it was, look, like, he, you know, isn't exactly a great guy. I think we can at least, like, agree on that, whatever you believe about the allegations against him. I just thought it was a nice gesture. I thought it was cool that, like, the flight attendant took the time to post it. And, you know what? I feel like more of us would be, you know, well-served if we, you know, thought of, you know, military soldiers and veterans that way, you know? And I know that quite a few people have said, oh, well, I know people who give up their seats for soldiers and da-da-da. You know what? Good. That's the way that, you know what, we should act, you know, towards those men and women in uniform. So I think if I'm going to take away anything from the situation, it's not that Patrick Kane is a class act and a great guy and all is forgiven. It's not going to be, oh, he's a piece of crap and I'm never going to celebrate anything that he does. All that I'm going to take away from it was that it was a nice act, and I feel like the world would be a lot better place if everyone kind of took a moment sometimes to think about how they could do something nice for somebody else. That's it. I mean, it doesn't have to be a grand, like, kind of referendum on Patrick Kane as a human being, honestly. So I'm right. Good with just kind of that middle ground of it was a nice act, and let's just all try to, you know, do nice things for each other once in a while. That's all.
That's a hell of a concept, buddy. I like it. I'm with you on that one. Absolutely sure. All right. So now we should move into our conference final previews and our thoughts on that. Before I do that, I want to sort of admonish myself for a thought I had on the podcast before.
Oh, God.
When I said that I don't think Erik Karlsson can carry his team through the playoffs. I was wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. And I was wrong here, and I admit it. My apologies.
Now, were we wrong in saying that the Ottawa-New York series was going to be a boring one?
I don't know if it was boring. It wasn't memorable, but it was. I thought it was a pretty standard playoff series. Is that kind of a cop-out?
I agree with that. I agree with that scenario, that statement that you made. And I would also say that I think we kind of got spoiled with how fun and chaotic the Edmonton-Anaheim series was. We got spoiled by the Capitals coming back to force a Game 7 and then ultimately doing what the Capitals do. And then, obviously, the Nashville Predators, you know, having PK Subban. So I feel like the Ottawa-New York series kind of had a lot to really try to kind of overcome when faced with those other three series. And I don't think it was boring. I didn't think it was awful. It just wasn't, like you said, it wasn't particularly memorable, I guess.
Yeah, and boy, the Capitals, they really did crap it all over themselves. And they, man, that third period, you got nothing. What, they have three shots on goal in the third period? They're down two, facing elimination at home, and all they can muster is three shots?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I could not believe what I was watching as went on.
Oh, my God. And, like, if you're the Capitals, right, what do you tell yourself? You can't really have much better of a roster than they have. I mean, you've got a diverse...
No! Like, what's the deficiency there?
Exactly. And, like, we talk about the Hawks, like, on paper having a really, really solid roster, right? But it's sort of same-ish. The Capitals have physicality, size, speed. They've got everything they need. They've got arguably the best goalie in the league right now in Braden Holtby. What do they have to do to win? I don't know what to tell them.
Not play the Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe. Clearly.
And I don't know. Like, Trotz isn't a bad coach.
No.
Like, I just don't know. I really don't know what more they can do.
I think it was Gingenberger asked us if we thought that Barry Trotz would get fired if the Caps lost Game 7. I don't think he's getting fired.
Well, who's a better candidate to replace him? You got to ask yourself that, too. That's sort of the same.
Trade for Joel Quenneville.
Well, that's kind of the conversation we had about Q a couple weeks ago when we said, like, maybe his shelf life is up. Yeah, but who's, you know, what's the alternative? So, I don't know.
Ken Hitchcock.
I'm sticking with Barry Trotz if I'm the Caps. And just, I think you need to do your best to sort of separate. Like, look, we've fallen short several times, but it doesn't mean we're going to do it again this time. Right?
Right.
You got to just keep trying, keep doing what you're doing. And I think they've got a nice mix there, obviously. They rolled through the regular season. I think doing something like trading Ovechkin would be a huge mistake. I don't know. I never root for the Capitals because I kind of get tired of the whole, like, look how great these guys are. Yeah, they've never won anything, right? But I'm starting to feel bad. Like, bad for their fans especially. It's brutal.
Yeah, it's awful, man. I can't even begin to describe, like, I know the headlines kind of got hyperbolic and annoying of, oh, Caps fans don't deserve this. And you know what?
That's BS.
You can't say that in sports. I'm sorry. That's just not... It's not a matter of deserving it or not deserving it. You can feel bad for a fan base, and I do feel bad for Capitals fans, you know, who have seen this amazing on-ice product year after year that has not yielded anything. But to say they don't deserve it's a bridge too far for me. So I'm going to dial that back a little bit, and I will agree with you that I do feel bad for Caps fans, and I know a lot of really, you know, good ones that are sick of, as you said, them vomiting all over themselves in a Game 7 situation like they did.
You know what will not make you vomit all over yourself?
Oh, God, this is a tremendous segue. I'm sure our sponsors love this.
I said it won't. Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe, our newest sponsor and one of my favorite places on earth, sincerely. Chuck's has been a place I've gone for many memorable days and nights. We had our baby shower there, several other things there. Check them out in Burbank or in Darien at chuckscafe.com. They've got the best barbecue, Mexican, and Cajun fare around, probably better than anything in the city as well. Just absolutely fantastic stuff. I love the Cochinita Pibil. That's the Saturday special. The barbecue nachos are simple and fantastic. They've got some of the best jambalaya I've ever had. They've got incredible daily specials. Obviously, on Sunday, they're going to have their Mother's Day brunch. So check out chuckscafe.com for all the details on that. They've got great bars at both locations with a huge commitment to craft beer. And the menu is always changing. They're always bringing in new breweries. So check out their Twitter account, too, at Chuck's Cafe. They constantly update those beer lists as well. They offer catering, banquets. The Darien location can suit your wedding party. After the wedding, you can have your, what do you call it, reception? That's what it's called. You have your wedding reception there. They've been on Chicago's Best and Food Network's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. If you watch that, you might see me in there. I was there. So visit chuckscafe.com or follow them on Twitter. At Chuck's Cafe. You will love it. I promise. They are fantastic, and we cannot be more proud to have Chuck's tied into our podcast lives right now. So, all right. What are you thinking? I'm thinking there's no way the Penguins don't win the Stanley Cup. Your thoughts?
I thought there was no way they were going to be able to get through the gauntlet of Columbus and Washington. So, I don't know what the heck to believe about the Penguins, honestly. Like, I feel like every time we underestimate that group, Sidney Crosby and his woozy-ass self just somehow drags them through another round. By the way, I'm going to go ahead and point this out. There is such a thing as being tough but stupid. I'm starting to lean that way with Sidney Crosby. That dude should not have been on the ice after the hellacious collision he had with the boards in that game in that series. That just was God. Why the hell was he not pulled from the ice? Why were concussion spotters like, oh, we can't do anything? The NHL had some bogus excuse about how, like, if you run into the boards, that isn't enough to trigger the concussion spotter. Well, what good is it then? Why does it have to be a body-on-body collision? That's like saying if your car hits a telephone pole, you can't make an insurance claim. That's insane!
I like that. That's a good analogy. All right, we have several conversations unfolding here at once, so let me try to address them one at a time. Yes, Sidney Crosby's dumb for playing. However, anyone that has played any level of sports would do the same thing, I would think. Because it's,
well, that's the point. That's the point. You can't trust the athletes to pull themselves from the game.
Correct.
And that's fine. I get that. That's how sports goes. I am going to be extremely critical of the NHL and their concussion protocol because, frankly, it apparently is non-existent.
Okay. Here's the problem there. A lot of the league is run by former players who don't – they subscribe to the same thought process that Sidney Crosby subscribes to, that it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm going to play. It's too important. I don't care about my health down the road. We'll deal with that when we deal with it. For now, I'm going to play hockey. Also dumb, but understandable. Until the league puts people in charge that are not all former players. I know Gary Bettman wasn't, but you know what I'm saying. There, a lot of the decision makers
are guys. Wait, Gary Bettman didn't play hockey?
I can't believe it. No, but like a lot of the big decision makers were like, oh, you used to be good at hockey, so now come run the league. Like, I hate that. I never get that. And that's just how it's going to continue to be. Gary Bettman is a concussion denier.
Yes,
so to expect any major change until he's out is foolish. It's a bad situation. We could do an entire podcast on this, and I'm sure we will this summer when we're filling for content. But
please, God, let there be content.
But for now, I think that I think we're agreeing, and there's bigger things that need to be unpacked, but probably not for today.
I would agree with that. I think we'll stick with kind of breaking things down here.
All right, well, here, with that in mind, what I want you to do is make an argument to me for the Ottawa Senators.
Their defensive strategy is really frustrating for teams to deal with.
Yes.
And I also don't think that Pittsburgh's goaltending can continue to play at the level that it is played at. It's just, it's not sustainable, I don't think. But, again, like I said, they have been feasting on people underestimating them throughout the postseason so far, and nothing would shock me at this point. It's just you would think logic would dictate at some point that Ottawa's trapping style would frustrate them or that their goaltending would regress to a more normal level than it has been in the first two rounds.
Well, those are – see, that's sort of the argument you can make, right? And those are sort of two things that, yeah, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury will not be as good as he was. What I saw from the Senators against the Rangers last round was the most what all the hockey players talk about doing, like what all the Blackhawks were saying after game two and game three about we need to simplify the game. We got to get the puck deep in forecheck. We've got to move the puck quickly, blah, blah, blah. We got to get shots on goal, blah, 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 blah. That is exactly what the Ottawa Senators did to the New York Rangers. They played fundamental hockey. And when you do that, you can beat anyone. Now, look. I'm not picking the Ottawa Senators to win the series by any means. I'm not. I think Penguins are going to win 5-6 games. But Ottawa has played such a stable, solid textbook hockey game throughout these playoffs so far that if that continues and if Craig Anderson can, you know, stand on his head like he's going to need to against a team as talented as the Penguins, they've got a fighting chance. Again, I'm not picking them, but they have executed so well throughout these playoffs and especially in game six against the Rangers. Man, that was that you put that tape on and say, this is how you win playoff hockey, that game. It was a thing of beauty, quite frankly. And I think the Penguins are going to win and win pretty handily. But if they can continue that style against a team that talented, I would not absolutely count out the Senators by any means. If I didn't just contradict myself three times.
who would have thought that a James Bond villain would be able to instill discipline and fundamental strength into a team? I never would have guessed.
Shocking. Shocking, yeah. I know. And then we got the Western Conference. You got more on that one? I just think it's talent versus will, kind of.
Oh, this is going to be a – I think it's going to be a fun series. I really do.
Penguin Sens, you mean?
No, I think that Predators I think Predators-Ducks is going to be a fun series. Sorry, I may have – jumped the gun a little bit on that, but you made the transition to the Western Conference, and you got me excited, man. I cannot wait for that to get started.
Well, I felt like we abandoned the Eastern Conference final a little bit quickly, but I think
you put it very succinctly and very simply. The Penguins have an incredibly skilled team. They've gotten some incredibly good goaltending. Their coaching is fantastic.
Yep.
Really good. And then you've got Ottawa, who has got Chicago boy Craig Anderson.
Chicago native, hashtag.
One of the most exciting hockey players on the planet, and Erik Karlsson. And a system that has been just grinding teams down through the first two rounds of the playoffs. I think it's a fascinating matchup, but I'm still super geeked and crazy excited for the West Series.
I would have been more excited for the West Series if it was Edmonton. Quite frankly, I think that would have been just a fantastic series. But I can cheer for the Predators. I hate the Ducks. I don't know what it is about the Ducks. Maybe it's Kessler. Maybe it's Perry. Maybe it's Getzlaff. Maybe it's all three. Maybe it's their ugly-ass uniforms.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I hate the Ducks, and I want Nashville to win.
Bring back the eggplant. I will root. I'll be happier.
And Team Mussolini.
Well, yeah, duh. I by the way, did really enjoy the Paul Kariya painting over the nine that they did, that social video the Ducks did celebrating their win over the Oilers. I thought that was a cool touch. And Paul Kariya was one of the first guys that, like, really kind of stood out to me and, like, was must-watch player when he broke into the NHL. So I kind of appreciated that throwback.
Paul Kariya is one of the best players in the history of sports video games. If you recall, Midway's 2-on-2 open ice challenge with the Pat Foley on the call, it was like the NBA Jam of hockey.
Yep.
Him and Timu Solani, stop it. And Guy Hebert manning the pipes.
You're never gonna beat that team. That's like Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl level of awesomeness.
Well, you could, because that game also featured the Pavel Bure Alexander McGillney pairing with Kirk McLean in goal. Beat that, pal.
You know what game Pavel Bure was insane in? Was
all of
Brett
them?
Hall 95. They only had Brett Hall's name licensed, so they had all the teams, but they didn't have any of the players except Brett Hull. But Pavel Bure was insane in that game. I used to play as Vancouver just so I could use him and run roughshod over St. Louis.
Well,
it was so
video
random,
games,
but so great.
It's like a 99 speed, you know, just like, yeah, good luck with that. Anyway, I digress. I forgot what even brought that up, but
You were talking about how ugly Anaheim's uniforms were, then I brought up Paul Kariya, and then that got us into the loop of video games. You know what, though? I feel like people like when we talk about video games, because that's one of the things that brings hockey fans together, is the greatness of all these games like Blades of Steel, NHL 94. I mean, all these games kind of brought us together, honestly, because hockey video games had such a good run of quality content, honestly.
I have admitted it. NHL 94 is what made me a hockey fan. That is what got me playing that game and learning all the players. That's what turned me into a hockey fan. Because guess what? I didn't have home games to watch on TV to really get into the Hawks. And then I just was like, you know what? Hockey's awesome. And I'm going to do everything I can to commit to it and learn as much about it as I can. And I did because of that game. You could laugh at it if you want, but it's the damn truth.
Yep.
I love playing that. I love learning about the league that way. And that's what grew my hockey fandom. Like, that probably, if I had to go back to the moment when it was born, that was it. That was definitely it.
Big silver radio, listening to Blackhawks games on the radio at my grandma's apartment and watching ESPN nationally televised games on my 13-inch TV in my bedroom was my kind of indoctrination into how awesome hockey was. So I think it's kind of cool that, like, we came to the sport in such, like, I would argue that they are unique ways. I mean, and you kind of had to do that back in the day as a Blackhawks fan, because you really didn't just have, oh, just pop on the TV and watch the, you know, Hawks play. That really wasn't an option at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that everyone's got sort of an interesting story about it. So if you have an interesting story about how you became a hockey fan, send us an email, madhousepod@gmail.com, and we will get to it as the offseason rolls along. All right, so I am openly rooting for the Nashville Predators, and it's hard because I'm so fed up with their organization's petulant, like, minor league crap they do about the Blackhawks, but I like the team. There's not really anyone on that team that's, you can say what you want about James Neal, but the dude's a power forward. He's going to play that way. Mike Ribeiro's been banished to hell.
Thank God.
PK Subban's there. I like Pecorine.
Philip Forsberg, obviously.
Yeah, they're a team that's tough not to like. And now that they have a coach that's letting them play, letting them loosen some things up in Laviolette, I'm openly rooting for Nashville. And the good news, if Nashville wins the Stanley Cup it's just going to intensify that rivalry with the Hawks, and that is a good thing.
That they need that. I feel like it's cool having St. Louis as a rival, but it would be so awesome to have Nashville as a team that you can point at and have that rivalry go both ways, where I think as of right now, I definitely feel like a lot more of the hatred comes from the Nashville side than the Chicago side. I would very much like it if that became like kind of a point of contention and kind of a sparring battle, you know, in the future. And I think if the Predators win the Cup, definitely could see that intensifying.
Absolutely. And I think we've probably with the sweep, we're starting to see it already. Some I'm interested to see how Hawks fans on Twitter are going to look as the Predators compete for the Western Conference title, how they'll be rooting, those sort of things. I think it's going to be fascinating. But I just don't like the Ducks, man. But I know that not liking them is not a reason to pick against them. They're deep as hell. They're tough as hell. I just think Nashville is a better team. I've been incredibly impressed with everything they've done throughout these playoffs. Like I just said, they've allowed the offense to have some creativity to dictate some play. Their young players have stepped up and been terrific. I think they're going to win a series. I like Nashville in six to beat the Ducks and to advance to the Cup final. How about you?
I'm actually going to pick Anaheim in seven because I honestly feel like this is kind of a coin flip series right now. Mm-hmm. I love all the things that you mentioned about Nashville. I think the reason I'm picking the Ducks just right now, and this is a completely superficial and possibly silly reason, so I will gladly take any criticism that anyone wants to levy at me for this reason. Mm-hmm. The way they responded after laying just a giant egg in Game 6,
yeah,
they could have easily gone into, oh crap, it's happening again. We're going to lose another Game 7 at home. We're going to lose another playoff series in embarrassing fashion. And they came out in Game 7 on a mission, and they just looked like a mentally strong team. And when you combine that with the depth that they have and with the talent that they have, even though I still think Randy Carlyle is a pud, and I think he's just a bumbling dope.
He's a breast.
He, boy.
I like to call people breasts instead of boobs.
I usually default to dope. So okay. I'll go ahead and do that here, that he's a dope. But I'm picking Anaheim because I think that something maybe finally clicked in that Game 7 where they realized that the sky isn't falling every time you're facing a 3-3 series with a Game 7 on home ice. I feel like that's kind of a mental hump almost that you have to overcome on your journey to potentially competing for a championship in any sport. You have to be able to look that moment in the eye where you may have wet the bed on numerous occasions before, but once you finally realize that you can do something, that confidence and that mental fortitude, I think, can be enough to carry you forward. And in a coin flip series, that's why I'm giving just the littlest, the smallest of edges to Anaheim. Although I will say also, I would not be shocked at all if Nashville won. I think it's a very good, very evenly matched series. I'm going Anaheim in seven.
All right, let's get our official picks for the Eastern Conference final, by the way. I sort of said five or six. I'll officially go on record, Penguins in five.
That's exactly what I'm going with, too. Penguins in five. So I think they wrap it up on home. They have home ice. I have to imagine they have home ice, right?
No. Ottawa has home ice,
wow.
I believe.
That's crazy.
No, you're right. I'm sorry.
I thought it went strictly by record. So, yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh in five.
Okay. That's a fair pick. And for the record, Anaheim has home ice against Nashville.
Yes, they do.
Before we move on to emails, with the conference final in mind, I want to just do like kind of a little mini rant. And this is not just about hockey. It's about sports in general, but especially hockey, when every little detail is nitpicked. There's going to be whoever wins the West, the NHL is already cringing, right? They're not happy that it's going to be Anaheim or it's going to be Nashville. And they'll especially be unhappy if it's Ottawa versus one of those two teams. But listen, I'm tired of the argument that, oh, well, these non-traditional markets mean they won't be entertaining or won't be good. These are, they've played them. They play seven games. They find a way to prove it. The four best teams in hockey. Okay. And just because Nashville is not from New York and just because Ottawa is not from Boston doesn't mean the series is going to be any worse than it would have been if one of those major market teams competed. So don't blow off the series, sports fans, simply because, oh, well, these markets are lame. It doesn't matter. These players have played their balls off to get to this point, and they're going to show you some great... Both these series are going to be really good, really interesting. And just because the market is small, it doesn't mean that the series is going to suck. It just drives me crazy. The people say, like, oh, the Bulls and Jazz series is going to be lame because Utah... Right? No. No one talks that way. Oh, it's the Portland Trailblazers. The Portland's not really a basketball market, so it's going to suck. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
I hate that. I really hate that argument. There's really good teams and non-traditional markets. We're seeing it. I mean, Ottawa's obviously a hockey market, but it's not a major market. I hate that. It's one of the weakest, most tired arguments in the world where non-hockey people are like, oh, yeah, that's going to be a good matchup for the ratings. I don't care about the ratings. I want them to be good. I want people to watch. But because the ratings are going to be bad, isn't going to deter me from watching a series. That's ridiculous.
Right.
If the Super Bowl was Tennessee versus
Tennessee
Arizona.
St. Louis is one of the best Super Bowls of our entire life. That's not. Those are not big markets. But it's the fact that it's the Super Bowl, and you had to earn your way to get there, and all the narratives that come along with it. You know what? Let's focus on that. I'm going to try to be positive about this. Try to focus on the good of these series, which is that these teams have earned their way here, playing, frankly, unique styles. Like, each team kind of has an identity. And I think that's cool. I think it gives you something to talk about. It gives you something to watch. As a hockey fan, I implore you, don't listen to this media narrative that the size of the market is somehow going to dictate the quality of the matchup. It's not. Watch the series. Enjoy the hockey, guys, because I hate to break this to you, but after these series are over and after the Stanley Cup final is over, hockey is gone until October. And we only have the Chicago Bears to look forward to aside from baseball. That's not good. Go ahead and enjoy the hockey while we have it, because soon you're going to be hearing about the Bears hitting each other while they're wearing helmets and shorts, and you're going to wish there was still hockey on your television.
Yeah. Jerks.
That, right. I feel like that might be one of the best takes I've ever delivered, by
that
the
was,
way.
That was spicy Cholula hot. That's what that was.
Yeah, and, you know, I loved, we got a tweet the other day from a listener who was like, is this the hot sauce that you guys like? Yes. That was, I love that that's like these things that like somehow stick out to our listeners. I love that when people randomly have Cholula, they think of us. Like, it may not be the like best impact ever, and it may not be the most meaningful impact ever, but we're impacting the lives of our listeners.
That's right. And the other thing we've gotten a lot of feedback about lately is the Taco Girl.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a Taco Girl update?
I have no update. I've not been there in a while. Oh. Sorry. I'll get there soon, I promise. Just for content.
I do have I do have an update on my hatred of people standing on the Michigan Avenue Bridge to take photos, by the way.
Did you throw some people off?
No, I did not. I
Good for you.
Have been trying to follow your advice and to be patient and respectful, and occasionally the irritation will kind of bubble back up a little bit, but I have been way, way calmer about it the last few days, or the last few weeks, I should say. However...
Uh-oh.
Train talkers are starting to get on my nerves, and I'm starting to have revenge fantasies, and I might need to talk through that at some point. So if it gets to a point where it's like really kind of, you know, downgrading my mental health to have to deal with this, we might have another confession corner or sin bin entry. But as for the bridge thing, I'm doing better. So thank you, Jay, and thank you, listeners, for your advice and your counsel to just simply be more patient, and that I would get used to the annoyance of that. I really have.
All right. I'm happy for you. Are you ready to do emails now?
What? Did I bother you that I went so far off the beaten path with her? You want me to expose my personality to these people, Jay, and I did it.
Oh, I love it. I love a fired up James Naveau. It's my favorite thing in the world.
I thought your favorite thing in the world was old-fashioned James Naveau. By the way, I celebrated National Correspondence Day the other day by writing a couple of letters. So I know that you hate random holidays, but I figured I'd throw that one out there.
Okay, yeah, we're going to move on now. Are you ready for emails? Yes or no?
You know what? Now I am ready for emails. Now that I got in that gratuitous dig, I am excited for emails. By the way, am I picking the winner this week, or are you?
You.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Have a quick on-air production meeting. Go on ahead and read the intro to the email, sir.
All right, let's go.
Email the guys at madhousepod@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter @madhousepod.
The email segment this week is brought to you by our old pals at Marishka's Restaurant, 604 Theodore Street in Crest Hill, just west of Route 53. Give them a call, 815-723-9371. Family owned and operated at the same place since 1933. It can't be bad when it's been there that long. I don't know why I'm mad.
It's older than my grandpa.
All right, cool story. No, I'm sorry. I'm really busting your balls today. I'm interested in the story. Please go on. What year was your grandfather born?
No, he was born in 1935. I just thought it was cool that you like mentioned if something's that old, it can't possibly be bad. You're absolutely right. My grandpa is almost that old, and he is really awesome. He and I were texting each other last night about a game that he was streaming on the internet. My grandpa is like the most tech-savvy 81-year-old man on the planet. It's awesome.
That's awesome. I want to meet him now. Sincerely, let's have him on the podcast.
You know what? I think we will at some point. I'm just warning you, though. He will want to talk about the Coyotes.
Okay, no deal. All right, third and fourth generations of the Zdravkovich family. I can't just do it when I read it. I know how to say it, but I can't. When it comes up in the copy, I'm like, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes. Zdravkovich. There it is.
There it is.
Hand-cut products in their own butcher shop, including their own steaks, burgers, and the famous poor boy sandwich. Go there, order it, rub it on yourself, devour it. It's amazing. You will be fully satisfied with the poor boy. If that's not your style, I don't know why it wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. They've got great steaks, seafood, chops, the awesome onion rings, the double baked potatoes, James's favorite, the Icelandic cod, which is always hand cut on premises. They've got a carryout menu, a full bar with craft brews, banquet facilities for groups up to 110 people. So visit Marishkas.com and check them out on Facebook at Facebook.com/Marishkas. Open 7 days a week and close only on Christmas, Easter, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. Go to Marishkas. Be satisfied food-wise.
Jay, can we do one more really quick thing right before you read an email? I just want to wish good luck to someone.
Yes.
Good luck to the Chicago Steel. They start the Clark Cup Final tomorrow. Their first ever appearance in the Clark Cup Final. They won the Eastern Conference for the first time in team history. I will have a preview up on NBC Chicago tomorrow. Got to talk to their leading scorer, Jack Bedini, and their head coach, Dan Muse. So good luck to the Steel. They're playing Sioux City starting tomorrow night.
My favorite Steel player, Johnny Walker. It's my guy.
Mm-hmm. I believe he's going to Arizona State, isn't he?
I don't know.
I believe he is. So, yeah, that's, you know what? Kudos to him and kudos to the Steel for a fantastic season. I know you and I both went to games this year and had a lot of fun out there. If you do want to go to the game, by the way, you can get a free ticket if your child plays youth hockey. They would get a free ticket into the game. So go out there, support the Steel, enjoy some good hockey, for God's sake.
Sounds good to me. All right, email time. Now remember, James, like we just discussed, for those of you just joining us for the first time in a while, for the last few weeks we've been giving random hockey cards from my collection to the best emailer. So James is in charge of that. Our first email here is from Kevin Peake. He is not eligible because he is the fine winner of the Brent Myers Tampa Bay Lightning card from week one.
Ah, yes.
I got some good ones ready to go. I've been previewing the stack. I got a choice of five or six here I'm going to pick randomly. So you are in charge of remembering who had the best email. But Kevin, not eligible for this week. But he has asked a good question. Has some thoughts about Richard Panik. We addressed that. He said, with the Oilers out, I have to be honest, these last four teams don't interest me. Pittsburgh, well, good. Seen it, done it. Ottawa has Carlson and Nashville Subban. But the team styles of play are, to me at least, like watching paint dry. And the Ducks might be the most unlikable team ever. I need a reason to watch, but I don't have one. Help me. Love, Kevin. He didn't say love. I added that.
Well, he does love us, and we love Kevin. So there you go.
Yeah, of course.
My argument, my thought is that the fact that the both series are these battles of contrasting style, likability, whatever you want to call it, I think that you can point to any of those narratives and you can be satisfied. Or if it comes down to it, just look at it as you're watching guys like Erik Karlsson and PK Subban, which he alluded to. You're also watching, you know, younger stars that are starting to come up into their own, especially on Nashville. They've got some incredible young talent on that team. I really think that you're watching some of the future of hockey here, and you can pick any narrative you want to, and I honestly, truly believe you're going to be treated to good hockey in this round. So I implore you, if you are a hockey fan, to watch these series, because I think you're going to be very happy with your decision to do so.
I'm going to say, Kevin, if you need a team to root for Nashville, because of what I said earlier, it will just intensify the rivalry with the Hawks, and rivalry is always a good thing. So if you have to root for somebody, pick them, because they're not evil like Anaheim. If the Penguins win, then the Hawks are knocked off that pedestal as the 3 Stanley Cup team, so you don't want them to win.
Yep.
So I would say pick between Nashville and Ottawa and have fun with it. All right, next email here from Hugo Maya. He says, hello, fellas. Love the podcast. With the panic extension today, doesn't it smell like a major trade is going to happen this offseason? It's going to be very difficult for Bowman to reward that cap space. Absolutely. We addressed it earlier. Yeah, I definitely think that's coming, and I think James does as well.
Yeah, it's just a matter of speculating as to what that major move is going to be, and honestly gives us something fun and exciting to kind of talk about as we're moving closer to the NHL draft and free agency. So, yeah, I think that a move is coming, and I think it at least gives us something to pay attention to, because this team obviously is not going to be able to just stand pat this offseason.
All right, email here from Evansville Hockey Fan. He says, who would be your possible targets if the Hawks were to seek out signing a UFA defense? I like Carl Alsner as a potential top-line guy. He played along John Carlson and had blocked a ton of shots. Hopefully he heals up well over the offseason and Chicago can show him what real championship banners look like. Insert joke about Winter Classic Champions banner here. Dmitry Kulikov and Brendan Smith are both 2 guys under 30 that could help. Also, what happened to Eddie's Fashion Corner? Take care, gentlemen. Eddie's Fashion Corner went on a brief hiatus because of the playoffs.
That's a good question, yeah.
But they will return in short order, I promise you that.
Good, because I think that was one of our most loved segments, and I'm sure a lot of people were curious what happened to it. So, yeah, I definitely am looking forward to the return of that.
I'm looking through the list of unrestricted free agents here on D.
D.
And, I mean, here's the problem. We've got to sort of go with a theory that they're not going to be able to add anyone expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stop. Let's see. Let's just, for sake of argument, let's just say, what do you want to set the number at? $3
million? Yeah.
Okay. We're looking at guys like Trevor Daley, Andrew Ferentz, 38 years old.
No.
Zdeněk Mikulajčuk, 34.
No.
Chris Russell, no.
No.
Derek England, no.
No.
Ron Hainsey, 36 years old.
No.
Pass. Carl Alsner, who he brought up, not a bad one, 28 years old, made $2.8 million last year.
I feel like he's going to get a pay bump based on his age and the fact that he was playing top pairing minutes for the Capitals.
Brendan Smith, very similar player, $2.75 million cap hit. So he'll be signing for more than that at age 28.
Not as much of a raise as Alsner, I don't think, but still probably going to get up there in the $4-4.5 million range, I would think. So might be out of the Blackhawks price range unless they make a move.
I mean, these are just a level of names, though, that you can expect unless a move is made. I do think there's a chance Brian Campbell could be back if he wants to do it for another $1 million. I don't know how much that helps you anymore. I was not totally impressed with what he did this year. For the money, probably worth having him around.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. I think you have to kind of temper your expectations with how much he's getting paid. But so you're on the right track with that.
I just don't know how much better they are that way. So it's not like a free agent is probably not the way they're going to, you know, fix the D. It's probably pretty unrealistic. There's going to have to be a trade here. It's almost certain. And I am fascinated to see what it's going to be.
By the way, can I throw something out there right now?
Mm-hmm.
I predict that with one of their first 2 picks, the Blackhawks are going to pick a goaltender.
Well, that leads into our next question here. From,
oh, wow.
Yeah,
yes.
From Liz Holbrook. Liz says, when learning of the Kings trading Ben Bishop's rights over to the Stars earlier this week, my thoughts went immediately to what's going to happen with the goalie tandem of Lehtinen and Niemi, which ended up going to the Hawks somehow, resigning Niemi as their backup goaltender if they can afford to cap it. I don't know if I want Niemi.
Isn't Niemi still under contract for next season?
Let me check that.
I'm pretty sure somebody posted a screen grab from Cap Friendly today, and it indicated that Niemi, Lettinen, and Bishop are now all under contract with the Stars.
That is correct.
I think it was somewhere in the ballpark of $14 million in goaltender salary for that
yes,
team.
Niemi has a $4.5 million contract for next season.
Yep, and I believe Lettinen is under contract for at least two or three more years, too.
I don't know what the Stars have in terms of buyouts left. I don't remember them buying anyone out. I could certainly be
mistaken.
Well,
I think you can buy out whoever you want. It's just a matter of you only had the one or the two compliance buyouts. I think now you can extend the cap hit out if you want to buy a guy out. Now, if the Stars were to buy out Antti Niemi, maybe that's a guy the Blackhawks take a flyer on while they develop a goaltender, but I still am firmly in the camp that they need to draft one early this year, and they need to get some goaltending depth in this organization because they really don't have any.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, Jeff Glass is a guy they're bringing up as an emergency goalie. That's not good enough. And I'm looking here at the free agent list here is also not incredibly encouraging.
It makes you sad and makes you want to rock around in the fetal position. Man, the free agent market this year is like TJ Oshie and bad. Like, that's really all it
is. It really is.
I take that back. Kevin Shattenkirk's going to be a free agent. He's decent.
But not nearly in the Hawks conversations. There's no way.
Oh, hell no.
But free agent goalies, like, I mean, Darcy Kemper, he's 27. He'll probably get a bump from 1.5, right, wherever he signs.
I don't think it's going to be a
No,
big
not a
bump,
big bump, but
really,
I think he'll get something.
That's not a guy that moves the needle for me.
Anders Nilsson, Curtis McElhinney. See, these guys are all up there in age. I guess it doesn't matter for a backup. You can sign someone cheap. But
true. It's just it's like the Nikolai Hobby Bullen thing. It's just a matter of buying time for your goaltender to kind of, like, gain confidence or whatever. So,
Boy, there's really nothing here that fires me up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can we also point out how hilarious it is that Stan Bowman got more for Scott Darling than the Kings got for Ben Bishop?
Bo Stink. Call him by his proper name, my friend. His name is Bo Stink. He's terrible. All right, Liz goes on. Remember last week we talked about the Patrick Kane Gatorade commercial and how weird it felt?
Yep.
She says, after the last episode, did you really have to bring up the Gatorade commercials? Living in Indy, watching those with PG and Kane kind of feels like torture. One last thing. I'm finally done with school for the semester, so I have time on my hands. Have any good book recommendations to do with either sports, broadcasting, or hockey?
Holy Jesus.
I have already read Howe and Orr's autobiography and then Gretzky's new book, so these three are out. Now that I have some free time, I'd love to spend my summer reading up on things to help me further my career that I love. Okay, I will give you one of each. I'm not sure what your sports broadcasting goal is, but one thing I read that was invaluable to me as a producer is the Radio Producer's Handbook.
You were looking at Liz Holbrook's name, weren't you? Because you just totally threw in a gratuitous R.
I guess I did. Yeah, that would be the one I recommend, the Radio Producer's Handbook, which is terrific. I could not have lived without it. I use it as a reference all the time. It's by Rick Kempfer and John Swanson. They produce for Eric and Kathy, known as Larry and Mary in the book when he's telling bad stories about them. And then my sports hockey book, I will tell you, take your pick between Theo Fleury's autobiography or Bob Probert's autobiography. Both are fascinating.
Crap, you took my hockey book.
Sorry.
I was literally just looking at the Theo Fleury book, and I had thought about reading it again. I haven't really read a good hockey book recently. I've been way more into, like, baseball books lately, it seems like. I'm going to blame Tom Verducci because his book, The Cubs Way,
awesome.
Was fantastic. God, was it good. All sorts of stuff in there, even some revelation stuff about the Matt Caesar bat thing. Like, I thought that was hilarious.
I'm not there yet. I haven't finished it yet.
He had a good anecdote about the Matt Caesar bat thing. So definitely check that out. When you get to it, you're going to really enjoy that. Outside of that, like, I have not been reading as many books as I've needed to lately. I've been going to the Jay Zawoski School of Train Riding. And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately, so
there you go.
All right, email here from our pal Spike T, longtime listener. He says, you mentioned that you do a trade for Colton Parayko. Panarin is who you said you would trade, and then he would probably be...
Wait a minute. How did he know that? We are just recording this podcast. That is weird.
I have a Twitter there, Pally. I've been talking about it for a long time. He said, instead of Panarin, how about Hjalmarsson straight up? St. Louis probably won't go for it, but maybe we can add to it. How do you feel about it? My hesitation there is you're immediately not... You're defeating the purpose.
Exactly.
I mean, Parayko is going to be good for a long time, but if you trade Nicholas Hjalmarsson, you're still in the same spot you were in before. Yeah, you've got a little more cap space, but you're not going to be able to find anyone close to Nicholas Hjalmarsson as a free agent with the money you have left. So I would – Nicholas Hjalmarsson is one of the last guys I'm considering trading. And know that a guy who plays the way he plays, the regression is going to come quick. But look, this team's window is realistically 2 or 3 more years. So if he can be anything close to the level he's been for that long, I think you have to keep him and try to win with him.
I would agree with you on that 100%. I feel like it would be defeating the purpose. I think you need to trade from your forward depth to get better defensively. I think trading a D-man for a D-man probably is not the way that the Blackhawks should go. By the way, if Liz is looking for a good non-sports book to read, I just got done reading Wild by Cheryl Strayed. That was really good. So for some reason, that escaped me during that last answer, but I had to throw it out there in case Liz has not read it yet.
Okay, fair enough. Next email here from John Huckalack. I hope I said that right, Josh. I'm sorry, Josh Huckalack. I got the first name wrong.
Well, I was about to say, how on earth did you get the last name right, but not the first name?
I know, I suck. He said, I thought it would be interesting if the Blackhawks replaced Scott Darling with another Illinois native in Garrett Sparks. I know last year he was a really cool story for the Leafs by starting his NHL career strong, but tailed off as he was sent back to the AHL. So I have a question for you. Is Sparks NHL ready? If so, what are the chances Sparks would be traded for? I like him better than anything the Hawks had. This year with the Marlies, 31 games with a 2.16 goals against, 0.922 save percentage, pretty good numbers. His contract, he's actually, I believe he is a free agent. He's a restricted free agent. So you'd have to trade for his rights. Look, man, I'm up for anything. At this point, I have no reason to think that Garrett Sparks would do a worse job than anybody else, you know, that they could have. But sure, I'll take a flyer on Garrett Sparks. How about you?
It's just a matter of what the Maple Leafs want for his rights, I would think. I think that that's actually a pretty solid idea. Not a guy that's really on the radar of probably a lot of folks around here, but I definitely have heard some good things from Leafs fans that appreciated his effort and his quality of play when he was with them. So I think that's a good out-of-the-box suggestion by John Josh. I really like it.
All right, Patrick Solden here. We didn't get to this. Ilya Kovalchuk looks like he wants to come back to the NHL. What do you think of that? And who do you think will make the most sense to trade for his rights, he wants to know. I'm curious as he's going to be in his mid-30s. He's a point-per-game player in the KHL and NHL. Keep up the good work. That's the sort of dude that a cup contender is going to want to look to add, but he really ruined his reputation the way he just bailed on the Devils. And I don't know if like a team's going to want to invest that money, for a guy like that when he could just bail again. I don't know.
Do they have to pay his contract or is that contract gone? The 17-year contract that he signed, is that off the table or do they have to pay that if they trade for his right?
I don't know what that means for him financially. Let's figure that out for next week and we'll have an answer for you. I don't want to tell you the wrong thing.
And that has been your edition of Stump the Madhouse podcast.
Yeah,
you successfully stumped us. Your prize, the satisfaction of making us look dumb. We hope you're really happy with yourself. Back to you, Jay.
All right, last email of the show. We got it. This is a long-ass podcast. Last email of the show with that in mind goes to Will Eggleston. Hello, Will. He says,
hello, Will.
James and Jay, I was recently playing NHL 17 season mode, and I started a fantasy draft like I always do. I had the number 2 overall pick and was kind of surprised to see Steven Stamkos drafted first overall. Nothing against him. It just surprised it wasn't Crosby. Who do you guys often argue is the best player on the planet? Do you guys have any idea why this would be? Yes, because computers are weird and stupid.
I agree with that.
NHL, who is playing? Oh, my buddy Kevin Zipak from The Score posted on his Twitter. He's doing seasons in the show, MLB The Show, which is regarded as like probably the finest, that or NBA 2K, but one of the finest sports games around. And after this year, Chris Bryant retires due to injury. So computers are weird. There's like Stamkos is probably really highly rated because he's fast. He's got a great shot. He can play a little bit physically, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't look at like the actual player. So I would think that's probably just it. It's probably some kind of, I don't know what you call it. Programming deficiency.
Well, I think we can agree there's only one player that would be the correct pick with the number one overall pick in a fantasy draft in this game.
Sergei Krivokrasov.
Oh my god, I hate you. No, the only correct answer to this question is Connor McDavid. I will hear no debate on this.
Well, if you have one season, though, if you have one season,
okay. You know, if you're doing a fantasy team and it's a ongoing thing,
yeah,
year after year,
that's the
you're drafting
obvious
Connor
choice.
McDavid.
Yes,
yeah,
no doubt about that. All right, well, you have a winner. Who's our emailer of the show?
It's a dead heat for me, but I am going to go.
Guess what? Well, this week, because I'm in a good mood, we're going to give away two.
Well, then I pick Liz Holbrook,
okay,
and John Josh, because I love John Josh. Suggestion. Yeah. I liked his suggestion of Garrett Sparks. I thought that was a really good kind of out-of-the-box pick, and I really liked that Liz had picked up on one of the things that I think is kind of being undersold a little bit in terms of what the Blackhawks need to do, and that's find a goaltender for the future. So I liked both of those. I declare them the winners.
All right. I'm searching through my card pack right now. This one for John Josh. He wins. Ooh, this is a good one. 1992 Mario Lemieux Pro Set.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Him hoisting the Stanley Cup.
Wow, that's really good.
All right, now for Liz. Let me go back into here. Liz, you win. Okay, not as good. not as good. A 1992-93 Trent Yanni card. Congratulations,
oh my God,
Liz.
Yes. Liz is never going to listen to the podcast again. She's going to be like, why the heck didn't I get the Mario Lemieux card?
Hey, it's truly random. It's truly random. Here's the notes on the back of Trent Yanni's card. Trent got a chance to play regularly when the Blackhawks traded him to the Flames for 2 months into 1991-92. He's a stay-at-home defender who always seems to make the right decision on the ice. Trent, who scored 4 goals in his first 13 shots with Calgary, damn, captained the 1988 Canadian Olympic squad. So there you go. Blackhawks legend Trent Yanni is now a member of Liz's hockey family.
Oh, my God. She's going to, like, literally meet Trent Yanni and smack him in the head and go, you're not Mario Lemieux!
Oh, it's a Pinnacle, by the way. If you're looking for the brand, it's a Pinnacle hockey card.
I thought they only made golf balls.
You're wrong. They make hockey cards, apparently. I don't think it's the same company.
No, probably not.
All right. So I've got 4 ready to go. I ordered I just got the other day from Amazon the card, like, like the plastic sheaths for them.
Yes.
So I'm going to start sending them out very, very soon. So keep your eyes peeled. And if you're one of the winners, make sure you send us your name, address, phone number, all that good stuff so I can get these sent out to you. But with that... That's going
to
do it. Oh, you got something else?
I would like to point out that next week, we are going to provide an update on our contest idea for the NHL draft tickets.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, that will occur next week. We promise we'll have an update on that because I know the draft's coming up. People are going to want to know if their ideas are cool enough to win. Let's make sure that happens next week.
All right, and if you have an idea, send it to madhousepod@gmail.com. This edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast has been brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris 708-478-6090. Marishka's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933, and our brand-new sponsor, Chuck's Southern Comforts Cafe in Burbank and Darien. Visit chuckscafe.com. Thank you all so much for listening to this edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. Thanks for your contributions. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.